Welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Thank you guys for tuning in for yet another episode. And tonight we're going to do things a little bit differently. As you guys may have remembered, a few weeks ago, me and a few other podcasters did a roundtable on the documentary series Hellier. Well, we decided to gang back up and try our hand at a fictional tale this time. We actually reviewed the film The Man Who Killed Hitler, and then the Bigfoot. So stay tuned for that. Now, normally I'd release this as a bonus episode, but truth be told, writing, researching, producing, editing, and releasing the show each and every week takes its toll. So I've been kicking around the idea of taking a week off between episodes 10 and 11, or 9 and 10, somewhere around in that boat, just to kind of give me a refresh button, because 20 episodes in a row is a long haul. But instead of doing that, I decided today we'll do the roundtable, and I'll actually sneak in a couple calls here and there. So this will be a lot easier, a lot lighter load on me, and you guys still get probably close to 2 hours of content today. So without further ado, let's get started in this special episode. And before we actually launch into the roundtable, I'm going to play a little Bigfoot call just to set the scene. So the following comes to us from an anonymous source in the state of Wyoming.
Hello, I am sharing this account from my aunt. Due to the nature of my family and of the account, I wish to remain anonymous, as does my aunt, just because of our community is fairly small and quite judgmental. Anyway, this is her story. My cousin was going into fourth grade, and as most Americans will remember, in fourth grade you study this history of your state. And so they had this great idea to take a trip along the Oregon Trail to camp and to find all of the different markers and historical places that they could go, just to kind of give her some schema for her fourth grade year. So what they did is they ended up staying at a campground that is right near a defunct city that was a big mining town, and now it's just a ghost town that offers tours and reenactments in the summer. And they went to the northwest side of our state and were following the Oregon Trail, and as they were going along, they were stopping at all the different markers and all the different historical stops to just take in the beauty and the history of our great state. And they lost track of time and didn't make it to the next campground they were supposed to. So they had to kick in plan B. They ended up staying in the forest where there's literally not a campground, but it was national forest, so they were fine to stay there. There was no other humans around. And so anyhow, my uncle is a very deep sleeper, and my aunt was awake, and by what she described as a chopping sound right next to their camper. And it was loud and clear, and my uncle was sleeping through it, so it took her a while to wake him. And once he roused, he was able to hear it as well, and they were peeking out the windows of the camper, but they couldn't see anything. And she described it as someone hitting wood on wood, and it was just terrifyingly loud next to their camper, and it eventually moved on and stopped, and they went to sleep. And the next morning they got out and they were looking for cut down trees, all kinds of evidence of, you know, splintered wood, but they didn't find any. And it was just kind of one of those puzzlers that they didn't really know what was happening. And she kind of felt creeped out about it, and she told my uncle, "We are never staying there again." Well, anyways, long story short, she was cooking dinner at their home, and my uncle was in the living room watching TV, and she heard the exact same chopping sound, the exact same wood on wood. And she ran into the living room, and my uncle was watching a popular TV program called Finding Bigfoot. And she said, you know, she never really watched that show before, but it led her to do some more research. And she said that during that time period, now keep in mind, my cousin is near 30. And so when you're in fourth grade, you're about 9 or 10. So 20 some years ago, she said that during that time period, there were reports of people having similar experiences in that part of Wyoming and in northeast Utah. And I should mention that when she heard the program, it was much later than, I misspoke, much later than when it all happened. But anyway, so that was very, very interesting to me. And it's always been a puzzler to her, and it kind of led her to find the unknown and reach out to me. So thanks so much. I love the podcast. It's my favorite thing, and have a great one.
Thank you, caller. Now, a few of you may remember a few episodes back we talked about the sooty grouse, which is a small game bird that makes a sound which could be mistaken for Sasquatch whoops, and some even argue wood knocks. Apparently, part of their mating ritual requires them to do some dances and make all kinds of noises. Now, I don't necessarily think that what this caller's relatives heard that night was the sooty grouse, but I am just laying it out there that sometimes there are ordinary explanations for extraordinary claims. Perhaps there's some other creature out there that makes similar sounds, and we're yet to catch that animal in the act. Thank you again, caller, for taking the time to share that call. And I highly suggest you guys stick around to the end of this program, because I have another Bigfoot call to share with you, and this one is a bit of a doozy. So without further ado, let's launch into this roundtable. Now again, we are discussing the film The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot, starring Sam Elliott, Ron Livingston, and Larry Miller. Now, a fair warning before we get started. If you have children listening, you may want to use discretion. I actually hated this film with a passion and used some colorful language throughout the review. If that is something you're trying to avoid, yet you still want to listen to the final story, you can skip ahead to the 1 hour and 23 minute mark and pick it up from there. Enjoy the roundtable.
Hey everybody, welcome to another round table. I don't know where I rolled the R on that. It was kind of like in the back of my throat. The rolling of the R was an afterthought. Hey, I'm David Flora from the Blurry Photos Podcast. We're doing another review of media, new media that's out there, because it was fun the first time and we want to do it again. And back at it again, my lads from all the podcasts. Why don't you boys introduce yourselves, and we'll roll in on into this monstrosity.
This is Derek from Monsters Among Us Podcast.
This is Toby from the Secret Transmission Podcast.
And this is Zinger from the Zing This Podcast.
Boys, how are you? Welcome back.
I don't know. I watched this movie, so...
I'm with Zinger on this one.
Hey, Zinger, before we get started, I need to ask you a question. What does your Nazi watch say right now? What time is it?
What time is the Nazi watch? I can't tell. I can't tell what time my watch says.
It's Nazi time.
I am so glad you said something. Okay, so you messaged me that, and it was like 5 minutes after, like, because me and you were watching like 5 minutes apart from each other. And you sent that, and me and Ellie were watching it, and I'm like, when it came on, I'm like, how do you tell time on that thing?
So that was like a day before I had watched it. So I was like, what are they talking about? Is it just like an heirloom? Like, is it? And then, yeah. And then it pops up. So
we didn't even mention movie we're watching, by the way.
Yeah, let me set things up for us. So we got together, and this was my idea, which is why I owe everyone a beer.
I told them it was yours because they were blaming me.
Yeah, this one was my idea. I called this audible. So first of all, the movie is The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot. which from a title like that, you would expect to be friggin' amazing, right?
Yeah.
So this movie, you can find it, on a couple of different streaming platforms. And I think that's about all you can find it on. I don't think it might have gone to select theaters. I don't know. I didn't go that far into it, but, it's on Amazon. But you have to pay for it. That's one caveat here. Rent it or buy it at your peril.
Don't buy it. Just rent it. trust me on this.
Yeah, about that. Whoops.
I may own it too. So yeah, it's on my Vudu.
I thought about it, and then the thought process went through my mind. If this movie's terrible, then I own another terrible movie. So I'm like, I'll just rent this one, and I'm so happy that I made that decision.
So this movie stars Sam Elliott, which probably is the main draw of the movie besides the title. It's directed by Robert D. Krzyzkowski.
Wait.
Krzyzkowski?
Make Toby pronounce it.
No. It'll be 10 times worse.
Well, let's just say he's a first-time and last-time full feature-length film director. I doubt anyone's ever going to give him another shot after this film.
Well, we can. Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit. But so,
I'm jumping the gun here.
So I saw this come out not too long ago. I saw the trailer for it, and I don't know if it popped up on YouTube or Facebook or what. But I thought it was a joke, and then I watched the trailer, and
still thought it was
like
a joke.
This. Well, yeah, I was like this might actually be an actual movie. And it kind of sounds like it would be really badass. And the trailer makes it kind of look badass.
It does.
Right?
It does. And the thing that worried me was when I saw the trailer, I saw all these awards popping up. I'm like, this isn't going to be what I think it is.
It did get awards, yeah. Like, Derek, do you remember? It was like, was it South by Southwest or like? It got some award from some, but it was like an independent Nevada City Film Festival, this says.
Yeah, might have been just something for showing up, like a participation award or something. Sorry, I don't see it on here. I'm on IMDb and I don't see it. But
I need to tell you guys something.
Okay,
I enjoyed it. I'm poking fun at it, but I actually enjoyed it. Didn't enjoy the last 10 minutes. I enjoyed the rest of it though. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but I feel like I'm the 1 in 4 that actually liked it.
I liked it, but it was one of those things where it finally clicked in my head that this is not the title card of the movie. It's something deeper. That's why I was like, oh, okay, I'm on board now with what this is doing. Also, I feel like the name for this movie was came up with during a Cards Against Humanity game. By the way, they told us not to read an ad.
And David just lost his sponsor. Well, you know, my biggest hang up here, and it's obvious that I hated this movie with a passion. I watched it twice just to make sure.
Will you like a movie one day?
Oh, I like a lot of movies made in the 1980s. my big problem with it is you have a title that promises action. It's promising you they're going to kill Hitler, they're going to kill Bigfoot, it's going to be epic, it's going to be this huge adventure, Grindhouse style. The poster, Grindhouse style. Like, you look at that thing, and you look at this
nice
looks
poster.
Awesome. This is a brilliant poster. This reminds me of the 80s when I would go well before Blockbuster. I grew up in a stick, so it wasn't even Blockbuster. It was a place called Visions, and our membership number was 80. That's how early on we got into all this. But I would pick out like these horror films, and it would have like the awesomest VHS cover you've ever seen. I'd get it home, and it was the worst piece of shit I've ever put into a VCR.
Yeah.
And this is the exact same problem. It's a beautiful title. It's a beautiful poster. They got Sam freaking Elliott in it. And it's just, it's not a good action movie. It's not a good horror movie. It's not a good thriller movie. It's not a good comedy. It's none of these things. It doesn't have a genre. It doesn't have a voice. And it doesn't have a point. I'm done. Well, I'll see you guys next week.
Well, okay. As I was watching this, I noticed that, you know, what it is. But as I was watching it the whole time, I was like, this could easily have been a Quentin Tarantino movie.
It should have been a Quentin Tarantino movie.
And I feel like if Tarantino would have had a hold of this script and everything, he would have made it something really, really special. I don't think it's a bad movie. I liked it, like I said. But I think a Tarantino could have really done something wild with this kind of story.
I could see him doing a good job with this, too. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let me read you the tag for it. This is from IMDb. I think the Amazon tagline to tell you the description of the movie, you know, the short little blurb, is just a little bit different, but it's pretty much exactly the same language and what it's saying. The blurb here is, a legendary American war veteran is recruited to hunt a mythical creature.
It's not wrong.
It's not wrong, no.
You don't see much of that.
That's about, what, like 20% of the movie?
If you're being generous, I think, yes.
Yeah.
So this movie was kind of a bait and switch. To me, it's more of a, like you said, Derek, it's not sure what it wants to do. It's kind of a coming to terms with regret and old age. It's a love story. It's a brother story. It's a story about brothers. Like, it's kind of a couple of different things. And then there's a couple of really cool things of a guy killing Hitler and a guy killing a Bigfoot. And so, like, on the whole, I'll say I appreciated the originality of it. We often complain about movies being just like rehashes these days. There's nothing new coming out there. So I'll give it credit. It tried something pretty, pretty spectacular. It didn't really deliver on what it promised. That's the thing. Like, it's promising, like you said, Derek, all this stuff from the title, from the poster, from the casting, from the previews, from, like, the blurb. And then that, it delivers, like, such a sliver of that. And the rest of it is, like, it's an indie movie, and it's trying to tell a different story than it promises, I feel like. What do you guys think?
Well, I just wanted to point out a very interesting thing. Rotten Tomatoes, this movie's technically certified fresh.
Really?
73%, which is still fresh, apparently. I think they're 3% over the fresh.
I mean, that's pretty decent.
Though the audience score, though, is 53%. So that's,
still,
I feel...
Still higher than I would think.
That I feel, is more accurate. Now, yeah, the thing that irritated me about this movie was it. I was sitting there, and I paused the movie a few times just to see how much time was left. Not because I was like, when are they going to get to the Bigfoot? When is something going to happen? Like, I mean, it's building up this guy who, it's just, it was like, did you guys just film Sam Elliott? Did you
just
guys just go?
House.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's great. And mind you, I don't think other people can pull off just the world weariness and the just. What he just the way he portrayed the role of somebody who was carrying like the weight of the world on his shoulders at one point, like just someone who's just down out and just like just kind of just lives day to day and doesn't really, I don't think, has a drive.
Well, they
anymore.
Wasted what they did is they wasted a good character. Sam Elliott does the best he can possibly do with what was the character's name? Barr. Calvin Barr, that was his name. It's almost like they wrote this whole script out where they kill Hitler and then they hunt down and kill Bigfoot. And then they sign on Sam Elliott and they're like, oh, well, he's way too old for this shit. So basically, they're like, oh, well, let's just skip the hunting part. Spoilers, by the way. I think there's going to be a ton of spoilers in this, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Already?
We're assuming you people
already
have seen it. Or
okay. Okay, or I just want to make sure everybody knows what's going on. But essentially, he goes to Canada to hunt down Bigfoot, and he's in this fire ring of some sort. I don't.
What was with the fire? I didn't understand.
I think they had to set up some barrier,
contamination
so the
ring or something.
Wouldn't cross.
Well, so let's bring up the plot, because the reason he's hunting Bigfoot is basically because
he killed
Hitler. Well, that.
Sorry, he killed Hitler. Bigfoot didn't kill Hitler. That would have been a more interesting movie.
Well, Bigfoot has a disease, and he's giving it to all the wildlife, and it's starting to spread to humans, and they have to track down Bigfoot, and they've already sent in a bunch of people to try to hunt this Bigfoot down, and they either come back empty-handed, or they didn't come back at all.
And there's only one Bigfoot, too, right? In this land?
Yeah.
Only one Bigfoot, and he was the only one with immunity.
Yes. I was about to say, he has a strange immunity to all this, too, to whatever the disease is, and that's the other reason they pick him. Like, but of course he does.
it's a really cool idea that I don't think any of us have ever heard of, like, a cryptid, like, being that dangerous because it got sick. And I think that's a really neat, unique idea for a story. And then even with the Hitler stuff, like, he makes a whole point about, like, why he basically hasn't told anyone that he was the one that killed Hitler. And he's like, because it was already in motion what he was doing. Like, killing the man didn't mean anything. His evil was already in motion. And I thought all of that was like, oh, yeah, that's crazy. Like, if this is how it would have actually went down, yeah. And then the whole Bigfoot thing, yeah, if a cryptid got a disease, heck, it could be catastrophic. So I thought the plot of the movie was really cool and interesting. It was just all the in-between that was like, why are we watching this man take pills? And what was the deal with the pills? We never found out what the pills were for, but he threw them away. There's a lot of stuff.
That stuff went crazy.
I have a theory, but I don't want to. I told Zanger about it.
It's all in his head because he stopped taking his meds?
I really think so. I think that's what this whole movie is really about, is that he stopped taking his medicine and he was kind of off already because he's lonely or whatever, you know. Who knows what he saw
PTSD
in World War II
as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So he stops taking the medicine. So now he thinks he killed Hitler. Now he thinks he's the government is sending people to pick him up to go take on Bigfoot. I don't know. This movie made me think a lot while I was watching it, and that's why I enjoyed it. So I know there were some boring slow parts, but I thought it was interesting.
Well, if you like the idea of a cryptid possessing some sort of, in this case, an illness. There's another film with Willem Dafoe, and I'm trying to think of the title.
Oh my God.
It's like The Hunter or The Hunted
Spider-Man.
Or something. It's Spider-Man. That's so... Well, he's in New Zealand, or Tasmania, rather, and he's hunting down the Tasmanian tiger, the thylacine, because its blood is poisonous, or its blood is a cure to something. I'm trying to remember the details of this film, but it was a much better version of what this is. It was more grounded, but it made sense. It was linear, and it didn't expect you to take wild leaps and bounds of, you know, out of your reality to accept what's going on in this film. It was grounded in reality. It's an easy way to say that.
Right.
So the movie takes place, the way it's shot, it's a series of flashbacks and some present day stuff, and the flashbacks jump around in time. There are some from when he killed Hitler. There are some from, you know, like the setup to when he was going to kill Hitler. There were some to when he came back from the war and had his the love of his life had moved on, you know, kind of thing. It jumped around in time. It wasn't very linear in that respect, which made it a tad bit hard to follow in some parts for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. Like, I was like, oh, this is, he's a little older. He's got a mustache now. This is post this, pre this. But it was still a little bit jarring. His whole thing was he was kind of having the PTSD and some flashbacks of when he went to Germany, infiltrated and shot Hitler, and was living with the regret, I think, of killing a person, and it didn't really matter that he killed this person because, like you said, Toby, things were already in motion. The German government covered it up. The U.S. government covered up the assassination. They put a Hitler double in there, maybe even multiple.
Well,
ones,
they,
I think
he
they
points
might
out
said.
Multiple, which I'm like, yeah. this is like a nicely seated conspiracy theorist. Like, if you know a ton of conspiracy theories, there's nice little nods in here, but none of those seeds grow to anything.
So he's dealing with the regret. This is what I took from it anyway. He's dealing with the regret of having to kill a person, having had killed a person, and it didn't really matter. And then when he comes back, the girl he was, he he was not brave enough to ask to marry him before he left. He was still working up the courage to get her to ask her to marry him. It was a weird scene where he gets down on one knee. She's got her back to him. She keeps walking and says some line that I'm sure carries a lot of metaphor. And then they never get married. She moves away. If I remember correctly,
it's try to keep up.
Yeah,
right. She says try to keep up. And then she writes him letters. There's a scene where he shows him throwing what appear to be her letters to him away, and he's crying about it. So he's got all this, like, the regret
she's dead
of
too.
Killing, the regret of the girl. It's just, and then he lives alone from then on. You know, it sets up a lot of loneliness and, like you said, weariness. And then the government shows up, and they're like, we need you to do this for us. We've got, you know, we know that you're, it's a pretty good scene. We know that you're immune to this because, you know, your blood is different from everybody else's. And he's like, how do you have my blood? And they're like, we're the government. You were in the military. Of course we have your blood.
It's in a refrigerator.
Yeah. And so then he goes and does this. He tracks down the Bigfoot. He kills it. And then he comes back. Well, no, then he then he dies, right? They show his funeral, but then he shows back up for his brother. And then it's like, and then he goes back to normal life. What? Then he goes to a play.
He faked his own death, and then he goes to a school play the next day.
Right.
Or whatever.
and then goes back to his house. So, like, that was, and then, oh my gosh, I'm kind of throwing it all out here, but, like.
You have to.
Then you have to. Then the whole movie, he's troubled by something in his shoe. He can't get out. Once the Bigfoot stuff is done, once he kills the Bigfoot and he himself has died, then he's walking home from oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'll circle back, but he's
No. What's he keep walking going. Back from? What's he walking back from?
Well, wait, I have to keep on this roll. He's walking and then he stops and he finally gets this little pebble out of his shoe and then he's like, ah, there it is, and then he walks and the movie's done. So that's metaphorical, probably.
Is this movie The Pebble in Your Shoe?
That's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah. Pebble in His Shoe's Bigfoot.
What he's walking back from and what is set up at the beginning of the movie is an interesting thing. It looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like there's a box, a wooden box under his bed that I'm just assuming is a gun. And he's contemplating suicide. And he can't bring himself to do that. Well, when he dies, the brother puts that box in the grave. And then Sam Elliott's like, you know what? I'm going to go dig that box up. He gets the box back. That's when he finds the pebble in the shoe and stuff. So we can talk about what do you guys think was in the box? Because
what's in
they
the
don't
box?
Show it.
That also made me feel like it was very Quentin Tarantino with the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. I just expected him to open it and just like a gold light hit him and you're like, what's in that damn box?
Well, it's got
to
be an alien. Look at the title. What's the next logical step?
Yeah.
I didn't even think about it being a gun, but that makes a ton
either.
Of sense.
You guys didn't think it was a gun?
No.
No, I thought it had something to do with the girl.
I did too.
I thought it was the ring.
Or it could have been military as well. The ring, yeah.
So when it first came out, I thought for sure it was a gun. He was contemplating killing himself because his actions at that time in the present day stuff were like he's giving away money. He's he finds a $100 scratch off ticket and he just gives it back to the clerk and is like, you know, if nobody picks it up, you keep it. I don't care.
By the way, that's the most sane conversation between a clerk at a convenience store and a person with a lottery ticket I've ever seen.
But all the stuff's to me, the signs pointed to he was done. He wanted to hang it up. But when the movie was over and the fact that he dug it all back up and took it back made me think that he didn't actually throw all those letters away, that it was something else that he threw away. You know, something important, but like that maybe he did save those letters from his his gal, right? I don't know. What did you guys think?
I thought it was the ring he was going to ask her to marry him. And I just kept it in there, and he just didn't want to open it because it was a reminder of what he didn't do. Which, okay. During the scene where he gets down on one knee to propose to her and she keeps going, she says before that that she doesn't want to take him to the train or doesn't want to go with him because she wants that night to be perfect. Mm. She wants to, she cannot bring herself. So that's why she probably knew 100% that's what he was doing. But she was like, I can't live with myself if he dies during the war and, you know, all this. So I can't see him doing that because I will say yes. So I think that that's what that was implying, was she knew what he was doing. She just wasn't giving him the chance because she didn't want to carry that burden.
She didn't want to face it. And she
dies, by the way, I think a little bit after the war's over, because there's a mention that she's going to take care of her sick mother. And then someone later says something about her dying.
Yeah, I do remember.
Okay.
You know, this movie is really brilliant because we're writing everything that's in between the lines. We're writing it, and it's like, ooh, that's really good. The gun, she didn't want to say yes.
This has a 73%.
So we're fixing the movie, is what you're saying.
No, yeah, we are. They just left it open.
Have a fix-it section here coming up. But keep going.
Well, I think that it's, there's just so much like the whole lottery ticket scene. Like I just thought, man, this is your Boy Scout, like Superman kind of superhero. That's like, here, take this scratch off. Like I have no need for it. You know,
the guy tries to give him a dog treat. He wouldn't, he had to pay for it. He wouldn't take it.
I just was thinking that's all him setting up, that this is the most genuinely nice, good guy that's ever existed. And he's just a badass because there's a fight scene where he beats up a couple of thugs that are messing with him. And it just, I didn't think of any of that. So it's kind of making this movie different for me now, just thinking back on it now. And I almost want to watch it again with all this in mind now.
Well, good thing you own it.
Yeah, I guess so.
going back to him being a badass. The movie opens with him in a bar. It's him and a bartender with the weirdest dialogue I've ever heard. And he steps outside and gets robbed by the most cliche gang members of all time. And basically
80s D-bags.
80s. Really. 80s gang members. Yeah. So they're
pretty sure I saw cigarettes rolled up in one of their sleeves.
A bunch of white kids with spiky hair, basically. So what it boils down to is they mug him, they take his wallet, and they like put a cigarette out on the picture, which nobody would do that. And then they try to steal his car, and that's when he loses it, and he beats them all down with a pipe or something. I don't know what he has, but he beats all four of these 20-something. So it's clear that Sam Elliott or Calvin Barr is a badass. So we go throughout the whole movie knowing that he killed Hitler, because they showed you like in the opening scene, and he beat up all these guys. We know he has these abilities, and they get him into Canada, and the first shot of the Bigfoot sequence is literally 1 second before he pulls the trigger and shoots Bigfoot in the head. There's no... I rented this movie to watch him hunt down Bigfoot, and he literally doesn't hunt down Bigfoot. It opens with Bigfoot one frame, and then they shoot him in the face, and then he runs away. That's it.
Ellie, okay. So Ellie and me watched this, and by the way, she actually enjoyed this movie too. So Toby, you're not alone.
Yes,
she really enjoyed it, and she also was the one that's like, you're renting it for $5, just buy it for $10. She goes, I might want to watch it again.
Double it.
I know, exactly.
Double the money you're spending.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And she thought her internet glitched. She went, what did you do? And I'm like, nothing. And she goes, well, what just happened? And I'm like, he shot Bigfoot. And she's like, no, where was the other stuff? So I was like, I'll rewind it, play. She's like, I just thought the internet messed up or something. I'm like, nope.
I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I had to rewind it too because I went to get a drink or something. I went to the kitchen and I turned around and like he's already shot Bigfoot. I'm like, what just happened? I just saw him at the Ring of Fire, which I didn't understand why the fire was there. And now he's already shooting him. I was confused too.
So he picks out his weapons, which is a brilliant scene and exactly what this movie needed to be the whole way through it.
Yeah.
He says that rifle, that scope, this knife.
It's a wall of weapons.
It's a huge wall of weapons.
But if you look at them, they're all ancient weapons. They're like guns from the early 1950s or something.
A Kalashnikov, an old military issue. Like, I think I did see where this movie supposedly took place in the 80s. So, I mean,
it's supposed to take place.
Yeah. But you think if the Canadian government and the United States government is giving him everything he needs in his disposal, that they'd have more than a wall with some, you know, antique guns on it. The scene was badass, though. I'll give you that. That was the scene the movie needed.
Having said all that, the scene was exactly what the movie was should have been. And there was, like, the zoom in, like the Army of Darkness
stuff. Thank you.
And he had that little wink and that little grin.
Yeah. And then it shows him, like, walking up to the ridge where there's the huge ring of fire that he has to get over to. Why would they not airdrop him in? Why did he have to walk? I don't know.
So how did he walk through it? There's a guy in, like, a fire suit. So good luck from here, buddy.
No. It was a contamination suit.
Either way, it's a wall of fire. He's not going anywhere.
And then all of a sudden, it's a scope and a bang. And you see this figure throw its head back and then run off. And you're like, was that the movie?
The noises it makes. The sounds. It sounds like a popple or some Muppet or something.
That's literally
the sound that it made. Like, come on.
I know why he was picked, though. He's also not only is he immune to the Bigfoot virus, he's immune to fire, and that's how he got through.
So then it starts a sequence. Let's take this opportunity because I can't keep it anymore. Let's talk about what the Bigfoot looked like.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, do you guys remember? Do any of you remember He-Man? And he had the next iteration of bad guys, the Horde?
Yeah.
The Horde had this furry beast.
Beastman, wasn't his name?
This was... Because Beastman, I think, was the orange guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one was an actual, like, furry guy.
Yes, I know who you're
And he was,
about.
Like, Hordor or whatever, his, like, his henchman.
Hodor?
He was, like, literally furry. It looks like the Bigfoot is the bastard love child of that guy and Skeletor.
Grizzlor? Does that sound right?
Maybe.
If you Google Grizzlor, it shows up, and that's what it looks like.
By the way, to recap our previous thing, the movie is called The Hunter.
Yes, The Hunter.
With Willem Dafoe. And it is a 2011 Australian film.
Highly recommend.
Sorry, but before we get on another tangent of let's double check this, I wanted to correct the other one. So I'm going to say this now. If anyone ever goes, the Patterson Gimlin film, that's obviously somebody in a monkey costume, I'm going to point at this movie and be like, this movie was made like a year ago, and that looks like a guy in a costume.
That's exactly right, Derek.
That is him.
That's the guy.
Yeah.
There's one really great line, though, where he goes,
is that just Toby?
Oh, come on now. There's that one good line where he's like, well, Bigfoot doesn't even have big feet. Or he says something really ridiculous like that.
I missed it. When was that?
He was talking on the walkie-talkie, and he's like,
yeah, that's
and,
right.
And it doesn't even have big feet. Then he chucks his walkie-talkie into the lake, because what you do. And then he goes
After you set a broken finger.
We don't have to say every single scene, which I really want to do because it's...
Oh, no. We have to get to the one thing.
Yeah, we do have to do the one. I know exactly what you're talking about. So, like, you know, he's hunting. I told Annie watched it with me, and we're both sitting there, like, mouths agape. Like, what is going on? And so, like... This sequence when he hunts the Bigfoot, which is one of the, you know, two, maybe two and a half most interesting parts of this movie. He is John Rambo and the Bigfoot is like Brian Dennehy. Right? And so he gets led off a cliff and breaks his finger, you know, like saving himself. And then he gets on the radio, which they're like, well, we heard a shot. Did you get him? And he's like, nope. Yep. Nope. I'll tell you when it's done. And then just chucks that walkie-talkie into the river. And it's like, you do it, Sam Elliott. You get him. Yeah.
Going back on the going back on the appearance of the, we'll call it the creature, the Bigfoot, they did make the, they had these CGI eyes. That's the one part. I did like, because, you know, if Bigfoot's a nocturnal creature, like everybody talks about him being, he'd have huge eyes. So that part was kind of cool, but yeah, it was so scrawny looking. It was about 6 foot two, 6 foot three, maybe.
It was just barely taller than him.
Buck 90, soaking wet. It wasn't very big, and you could tell it was a guy in a suit. And I actually did some digging after I watched it the second time, and I watched some of the press junket that Sam Elliott did. And apparently the guy that wore the suit in the first 5 minutes of filming jumped off a rock and sprained his ankle to the point where he couldn't walk. That's why the remainder of the film is him wrestling around on the ground with this guy in a monkey suit, practically. And they had all this stuff planned out that he didn't get to do. So a little bit there. To me, I would have found a replacement and put him in that suit instead of just kill the movie.
Hey,
but
Bill, come here. Yeah. Can you fit in a suit?
Just grab the first PA you can see him, like, get that kid in a suit. Let Sam Elliott beat up on him.
Yeah, it was a weird, like, mixture of, like, real effects and CGI in there.
Yeah.
Real and it was, bad effects and CGI.
Maybe they were like, well, Bigfoot's sick. We have to make him a little emaciated. We have to make him look a little skinny or something. But I'm willing to forgive it. But it was, I mean, the face of it was pretty horrific. Like, when they showed the close-ups and stuff, and the eyes sometimes, they're, like, milky white, and it kind of had an alien, a gray-esque kind of look to it sometimes. Kind of had, like, a skeletal look. It was interesting.
So
it
hold
had
on.
No
hold
nose
on.
At all.
No so hold nose. On, Flora.
Okay.
Are you saying that these creatures are bred by aliens?
It could be a hybrid.
Interesting.
Could have been made to mine monoatomic gold.
Ah.
I don't know which part you guys are talking about that you're saving, but are you talking about the part where he stabs it at the end? And then what he does in...
And then where it's just full.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm backing out of it. Then I'll let David spoil this one. He's like a little girl. He looks like Stefan from SNL right now. David does. He's so excited. He's just squealing over there.
They got me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, they had me in the first half. When he finally tracks down the Bigfoot, he sees Bigfoot die. Right, he lays a bunch of sticks around him. He feels bad for killing it. Like, the thing, like, is like, and then it dies. And he's like, oh, what have I done? You know, now I've...
Cried.
Yeah, he cries. He holds its hand
manly
and
tears.
Cries.
Manly tears.
So he builds this, like, makeshift funeral pyre. He lights it. All of a sudden, the Bigfoot's like, it, like, jumps up and, like, just completely wrecks, Sam Elliott in the ensuing scenes. He breaks his arm. It gets real graphic real quick.
Yeah, the arm break got me. I was like, whoa, what just happened?
Yeah. Yeah, he breaks Sam Elliott's arm. He wrestles him around. Sam Elliott, like, I think he gets a shot off. He's got him on the ground. Sam Elliott stabs him. And then the Bigfoot just SNL projectile vomits.
Oh, yeah.
SNL projectile vomits onto Sam Elliott, into his mouth, everywhere. And I'm like, what is this movie? What has this turned into?
Look, this entire movie is a roller coaster. I told Zanger this. It's a roller coaster. Like, it's all like, oh, the anticipation. You're going up. Oh, there's a little dip with the Hitler stuff. And then you're going up. And then you're going up. And then that's when you hit all the curves and the twists and the loops and everything. And then you
you're puking.
And then you slow down at the very end of the movie. And it's just a slow, like, okay, we're getting close to getting off this ride. Thank you for riding this ride with us. Please keep your hands inside. Grab your belongings and leave the roller coaster. And you're like, no, just end. I'm ready to get off.
You're right.
So I understand that.
You're not wrong.
I get that.
It's almost like the night before they shot that scene, like, the producer's in the trailer with Robert, the director, and he's like, you know, I just got a hold of a vomit machine. We ought to use that thing tomorrow. Like, can we put it in somehow? Like, can we?
I got
we
this new vomit cannon.
He's like, I got
you already
go to-
paid for it. Might as well use it.
It's just because they had it, it had to go into film. Is how that felt. Like, just no. There's no reason for any of that. Like, I mean, it was whatever. I mean, it was effective. We're talking about it, but at the same time, it's
and then he bites his ear off.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Almost
well,
forgot.
I really wanted to see what it was. I was like, was it a finger? What was that?
Well, he spit it out ear. After he. Well, that was part of what he puked out, I think, was the finger, because they show it on the ground. Or the ear, not the finger. Yeah, jeez. May as well be a finger. Who cares at this point?
Yeah, and so then he
shoots it.
He lays down because he's a broken heap at this point because Bigfoot's just kind of wrecked him, and then it goes to like the brother of Sam Elliott's character, and then they have a funeral for Sam Elliott, and then the brother's out fishing, and Sam Elliott walks up, and.
What about this? What about this scene? Because his brother's he cuts
barber,
hair.
Barber.
He's a barber, he's cutting this kid's hair, and the kid's dad is there, and he's like, "Yeah, I heard your brother died," and he's just like being an asshole through the whole thing, and he's just
really
cutting
is.
His hair, and he's like, "Yep, he died." It's just a really weird scene. Like, I was like, "This is about to lead to something. The brother's about to snap or do something."
Nope.
And then he goes fishing.
You know what's weird?
That's how it snaps.
I don't know if you guys caught this, but you know the flashback scene where they're at dinner and the girl, I can't remember what her name was. I was looking on my sheet here. Maxine, I think, was her name. They were at dinner and he said, "Oh, it's about time we had our real first date." But it looked like they'd been dating for months. He was going to propose to her like in minutes from then.
Yeah.
So that whole thing was weird. But anyway, at a certain point, she's a teacher and the parents of one of her students comes by and interrupts the proposal, and the guy, if you notice, the guy looks extremely similar to the guy that shows up in the barbershop later.
Oh,
so I'm wondering if it's like that's the kid that they were talking about. He's now grown up and he has his own kid. I don't know what the point of all that is, but the two actors looked very similar. One of them was from Deadwood, one of the guys from Deadwood. And I was going to look up who the other guy was, but I couldn't even tell you what his name was or anything, but.
The brother has been in stuff.
Larry Miller is the brother. You'd remember him from like 10 Things I Hate About You. He was the father on that. He's a big comedian, especially in the 90s. And Ron Livingston's in this as well for like two hot minutes.
Right. As the government agent whose character name is Flagpin, because that's what he's got on his lapel.
Somebody watched the X-Files, methinks. I don't know.
And after he comes back, well, so in that barbershop scene, it sounded like the guy who was giving the brother a hard time was going to be like a conspiracy nut. He was going to be like, I heard that your brother died hunting Bigfoot. Is that true? You know, like, and it was going to go somewhere from there or something.
That feel to it. It had that exact feel to it. And then he's just a dick to him the whole time. And you're like, oh, what?
Okay.
He didn't. Yeah. Didn't really go anywhere. And Sam Elliott shows back up, and I'm like, okay, so he's not dead. Or is he a ghost? And it wasn't until he went to the damn school play of his niece that I was like, okay, he's not a ghost. But this is weird,
he?
Right?
But he's still supposed to be dead and probably shouldn't be in public.
Right?
You know what?
And then goes back to his own house.
I'm going to throw out one more ridiculous theory to make this movie fun. Is his brother a complete imagination? Like, the younger brother, is this what he would imagine his brother would have been like if he would have came back from the war, and you're just not seeing it? You're not seeing much of the little brother? Does that make sense? Like, he's got this...
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, the brother's real because he had to give him that dinosaur figure.
I mean, at that point, yeah, I don't know what's real and... what's not.
I think there's something not real in this movie. That's all. That's my conspiracy theory for this movie. Something's not real. Something.
Yeah.
Somewhere. What about the toy dinosaur?
What type of dinosaur was that, David?
It looked like a brachiosaurus.
All right, fair enough.
We've talked about a lot of crazy scenes in this film, but there's one scene that I can't get out of my head, and it's the shaving scene.
I was going to bring that up later.
That was cool.
Out of nowhere. Okay, Toby liked it. Toby, get out of here.
I liked it. I thought it was just a weird...
Tell us what happened, Toby.
Okay, sum it up so...
for us. Is this what happens to you when you get a shave? Is that why you don't shave?
Yes.
You don't want to get cursed.
This guy has this straight razor, and he's telling the story about, like, how if you get a shave from someone... And you announce that it's a special shave. The blood, if you bleed, it tells the prophecy of what's going to happen. So he's on his mission to kill Hitler. And this guy is like, and the whole time he's talking and he's like, if I'm steady, if my hands are steady and I don't cut you, you will fail. But if I try to cut you, we're both cursed. So if I intentionally mess this up to make sure you fail, I'm also cursed. So he's like giving all these rules of how this thing works, and he gives him a real nice clean shave, and he goes, you're gonna fail your mission. And then he gets his straight razor and he gives him a little cut behind the ear, and he goes,
behind the same ear that got bitten off.
Oh, good call.
The synchronicities.
Call back.
Yeah, so he says you're gonna fail, or I guess because he did bleed, his mission was gonna be successful, because that was the whole thing. If he bled,
but he was cursed, right? So like, if it's an inadvertent cut, he would have good luck, but if he tried to do anything on purpose or anything like that, he'd be cursed, right?
Yes.
So he did it on purpose.
But the man wanted to make sure that he had good luck for his mission coming up.
And the man
Hitler.
Was a Russian. This was right before he went on his assassination mission.
With an American accent, I'll point out. He did not have a Russian accent.
No.
He had some kind of accent, but
it was real light, and it certainly wasn't Russian.
So I just want to point out two things real quick. Actually, there's a few things. One, the like gizmo he puts together to shoot Hitler.
Holy cow. I love that.
That is so cool. That is actually really cool.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so is that the beginning of the movie? Yeah, it has to be at the beginning of the movie because of the Nazi watch. During one of the flashbacks, he gets there and he puts a ton of stuff on the table because he's going to go see Hitler, and he's being like, they're not searching him. They're just telling him to put everything on the table, and there's like a flask. There's
a pen.
Like a pen. A ton of random stuff. And then as he's walking up to see Hitler, he's like putting, like he's getting something out of his shoe. He's like putting together like this makeshift gun. And it's super cool because it's like, you never get a good look at it too, is the other thing.
There was a Clint Eastwood movie in the early 90s where he played a Secret Service agent, and he had to stop John Malkovich from shooting the president with a gun that he snuck into a bank with the same way. And he's putting it together under the table, and it's like all made out of like plastic pen pieces and stuff. So, you know, that scene's been done before. It's kind of cool with the Hitler thing. They used a Nazi belt buckle or flask. It was a flask.
Yeah, there's
flask
a flask.
A suppressor.
Yeah, it's like a silencer, yeah.
There's something in the dog... The dog leash that he takes out too, like he's grabbing stuff from all over his body.
He's got a secret compartment in his shoe that he flips out, and he's pulling, I guess, the bullets out of that. I don't know what that was. He does it so fast and shuffles it around. You're just like, what's going on? He's building something.
He does like the goose step thing to clap the thing closed on the boot. Then he just shoots Hitler. I mean, it's just this build up to where it's like just Hitler sitting there and he's dead.
Now, was Hitler sick? He seemed like he was, like, coughing or something.
Shaken. I think that is a historical fact. I think Hitler did suffer from something, didn't he?
Stomach issues, if I remember correctly. Also, I feel like the actor was too short. I thought Hitler was taller for some reason.
I think Hitler was pretty short, wasn't he? He was, like, 5'5", or something.
Now I gotta find this out. Now I'm gonna get...
It's just because you look up to him, Singer.
Yeah, but then... sure, the Jewish kid looks up to Hitler.
Ouch.
And then, I don't know if we ever explained this, but at one point when he's putting the stuff on the desk, and he dresses up as an SS officer, and he goes in the place where Hitler is.
Huh.
And at one point when he's... So he's average. So at one point when he goes in there, there's another officer that I think it was another one that comes in, and and he like looks at his watch, and then it shows a picture of the watch. It's a regular watch in all respects, except the hands of it are a swastika.
And it doesn't make... How do you
tell
time?
And there's no way to tell time with a watch.
It's just spinning with seconds.
It's just a spinning swastika. So that's why it's like, well, what time is it? It's Nazi,
Nazi time.
All day, every day.
There's one other scene I wanted to point out. It was just random, and I'm like, what's the point of this? So remember when he's hunting Bigfoot?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the owl lands.
Oh yeah.
And he's like,
oh yeah, that was.
And he's like, hi owl. And it's like, flies off.
Yeah.
Hi owl. I just said the entire scene. That was it beginning to end. Also, gonna point this out now. I didn't like they cast a young version of Sam Elliott because I feel like the guy's looked that way since he's been a child. Like, came out with the mustache and looking like an old man.
Well, there's a big problem with that. They use, what was his name? Aiden Turner is the actor that they use for Calvin Barr when he's younger. And they start off, he's clean shaven, and then he has a full beard, and then he has a weird, like, porn mustache. He has all these different looks, and I was pretty confused. I'll be honest with you. I'm like, is this the same guy that we saw in the Hitler scene? Like, who the hell is this guy? And it took me half the movie to figure out that that was young Calvin. I mean, I had my assumptions, but nothing was verified until halfway through the film.
Oh, yeah. Also, I'm going to point out they cheaped out. Did you realize that there was, like, barely any German spoken?
There was no speaking in any of those those German flashbacks.
Because I don't think they could have gotten anyone to translate or tell them what to say in German. Because a lot of it was just pointing and gesturing, and I'm like... You seriously gonna have nobody talk? And the only thing he said was something Furline to the girl, which is thank you, Furline. Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
I'm like, because I was sitting there watching, I'm like, why is nobody talking? Did they seriously not get an actor to know German enough to at least say something?
I was saving this for the fix it portion of this roundtable because that could have gone a long way. Just add some sort of narration over these scenes or give this guy some dialogue. Let us know what's happening early on so we're not so confused through the first half of the movie. And then we can stomach the second half that's god-awful.
Yeah. Let's fix it. Fix it
I'm
now.
With you. Let's move on to the... How would you fix a movie called The Man Who Killed Hitler and Then the Bigfoot from this story of a man that is brilliantly portrayed by Sam Elliott... But is
tragically is in this
much,
movie.
Pretty much two to three different movies in one, in my opinion. How would you guys do it?
My first move would be to gut the romantic stuff. You can have it in flashbacks a little bit here and there, like just the fact that he's troubled. Like she existed, he's troubled. She's mentioned a few times. You can be super subtle about it. You don't have to hit us over the head with 25-minute flashbacks like they did. That would go a long way. And then and replace that with some action scenes. Show him maybe doing a training montage or something before he goes to Canada. Anything that lives up to the poster, lives up to the name, lives up to the premise of the film. That would be my first thing, is to cut that out and give us some action. And there's got to be something. And it doesn't even have to be with Sam Elliott. It could be with something else. Disguise it. Do something. You know, have a military expert spend 2 days with him in the field. And it's like, oh,
show
he's going to be here.
Teams that failed with Bigfoot.
Yeah, anything. He found a team, like a slaughtered team or something. Who the hell knows? Anything that's just more interesting than just cut straight to a scope and then a dead Bigfoot. Like, give us what we paid to see.
Toby, what about you?
I think a more clear story, like it was all over the place. And we talked about this movie all over the place, which just makes perfect sense for this movie.
True.
But there's no particular order. It's almost like they cut all the scenes that they wanted to use and then they just put it in a randomizer almost. But I don't know. I like that. He was just an off character, and he there was something about him. He was lonely, he was depressed, whatever it was. I just think that you could have shown more of him being a badass, so it's more believable when he gets this Bigfoot battle. And if they showed more of the Bigfoot battle, I think it would have been a lot more interesting. You could have cut out a lot of his day-to-day routine stuff. Like,
yeah.
You could have even cut out the whole section with the brother, because it ended up being completely pointless. Because there's too much going on. It just needed a more focused, like, okay, this man is extraordinary. This man has is special for whatever reason, whether it's this medicine that the government has given him. There's something with the medicine. Or, you know, because he's killed Hitler, maybe have him go on a couple of other adventures. Maybe he skydives into wherever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like, that just agent says stuff about, like, oh, well, you know, my father used to tell stories about you, and then they got weirder. It's like, what, was killing Hitler? Like, where did you start with the story and end then? Because...
yeah.
If you started with killing Hitler.
And then ended with, yeah, and then he killed Hitler.
Yeah, I think just more adventures of, like, what he did, because that can't be the only thing this badass did. You know, like, there had to been more stories. I don't know, just say, and more focused, I guess, focused on him and throughout the years instead of the love story, the brother. Just, like, let's focus more on him and then, you know, actually show a better Bigfoot encounter and how he found it. I wanted him to be like Wolverine, basically, and like smelling twigs and being like, okay, he moved south from here.
That's what they should have showed us, yeah.
Yeah.
It's stuff that didn't make sense, you know?
They said he was an amazing tracker because of, like, he was able to find out which one was the real Hitler, and, you know, he followed them and did all this stuff, and it's like, you never saw him doing that. He was walking a dog through Germany.
Oh, my God. I love the sequence when he leaves the Russians. He leaves them in a forest. He's got a backpack and a German Shepherd, and the next scene, he's, like, in the back of a truck, right? The back of a pickup truck. With some chickens and the dog, and he's driving, and he's being driven down. The next scene, he's in a boat, you know, being rowed down a river. And I turn to Annie, and I'm like, what's next? Him on a train? Next scene, he's on a damn train. I screamed. I was like, ah!
I actually watched it with Sarah, and she hated it but loved it at the same time. Like, she ripped on. I've never seen a rip on a film like this. And, you know, throughout the movie, Sam Elliott's character's old and rickety. He could barely stand up, and, you know, he's old, and his mustache barely moves when he talks. And
that's just Sam Elliott.
And at the at the Bigfoot sequence, he's freehanding a rock wall, like a 400 or 500 foot high wall. He's climbing up that thing. He's just doing all kinds of stuff that I couldn't do at 40 years old. There's no way in hell Sam Elliott's doing it, whatever he is, 75, 80. Like, it's just unrealistic. And that's a bad thing to pick on, but it was so blatant that, you know, they're like, oh, well, look how badass he is. He's climbing up this mountain. But they, like Toby said, they didn't show us anything else that made us think that he was capable of any of this.
74.
There we go.
Real life.
I feel like that's young.
Well, yeah, but I don't know how old the character is. If it was mid-80s and
No, I'm just saying in general. I said, I do feel that that man has not aged in years. Like, he's just been an old man.
You know, y'all say that y'all watch this with y'all's significant other. I also watched it with Kristen, and the entire time, like, she was into it for about 10 minutes, and then I kept looking over, and she was just playing on her phone, playing a pool game on her phone, not even paying attention. So.
Smart girl. She's one of the lucky ones.
Justin, how would you fix it? Haven't heard from you yet.
Okay. I would have this be Sam Elliott at that bar, flashback recounting him killing Hitler.
Oh, yeah.
And then, as soon as he kills Hitler, the door opens and Bigfoot walks out. And he's like, so we meet again.
Bigfoot was in the bathroom the whole time.
Yeah.
I heard what you said about killing Hitler. He was my father.
And he's like, so we meet. And then this old man, Sam Elliott, fights Bigfoot in a bar.
So it's just a bar brawl?
It's Roadhouse.
It's Roadhouse.
Sam Elliott was in Roadhouse. We full circle.
That's the thing. This movie, it's a weird, I'm like, I swear this is one of those things to where, as we all have shown, you get different things from this. There's, yes, the Bigfoot stuff, but there's also this weird metaphorical thing that's going on with his shoes or that box or whatever else. So I feel like that's why this has a weird high tomato rating and that it got all these awards, is that there's something deeper that us going into it being assholes are not picking up on.
Or I think that maybe the filmmakers thought too hard about a lot of this stuff, and they didn't actually explain. We never got an explanation as to what the box was, what the shoe deal was, unless it was the stop and tie the shoes. She said that. She's like, oh, we'll just pretend like you, how did it go? You know, next time we see each other, we'll just pretend you stopped to tie your shoes.
Your shoe.
Something,
when
I don't
you
know.
Look up, I'll be there or something.
Yeah,
like
it was so dumb. It's hard to explain. But does that have something to do with why he's always digging in his shoe? I don't follow. I just don't.
Man needs to see a cobbler.
I took it as some kind of metaphor for him finally facing something in his life. And once he is able to face it, and I don't know if that means that he's happy now that he's perceived to be dead. He faced
but he lives in the same house.
There's something he came to terms with, and that was getting the pebble out of his shoe. Like, there's some connection and a metaphor there, and I'm kind of like, could be a couple of things.
So what you're saying, sir, is if I get a rock stuck in my shoe, the only logical conclusion is go kill Bigfoot.
Yeah, yes. Face it.
And not try to just get the pebble out of my shoe.
Yeah, you got to face your Bigfoot. That's the thing. We all have our Bigfoots. We all have our ring of fire. we have to go face them.
Did anybody look at this film as like a really terrible sequel to Forrest Gump? I mean, the whole time I'm watching it, that's literally all I could think is like he's just Forrest Gumping his way through this whole thing. I mean, he's supposed to be this awesome, you know, highly trained military guy, but we, like I said 100 times, we didn't see that. So to me, it's just some strange, borderline goofy guy. I mean,
kind of bumbles his way through his relationship, like he's very nervous.
And yeah, yeah.
What he supposedly has in courage and bravery, and militarily, he lacks all that when it comes to the girl, you know?
Well, he also lacks it when it comes to getting in his car late at night, because you'd think somebody trained with that, those kind of skills would notice 4 guys walking up on him as he's keying into his car.
Yeah, since he is he is going to hunt down Bigfoot, but he didn't notice the 4 guys. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I just shrugged my shoulders. What are you going to
do? I agree with you guys.
All of us are like, shrugging our shoulders.
It's kind of, yeah, this movie is kind of just like a shoulder shrug. Like, all the elements are there, but you got to deliver on what you promise.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you can't do that when it's less than a quarter of the movie.
Let's do it this way. Why don't we go around, everybody sum it up in, like, a sentence or two, what your overall thought of what this film was or could have been, or, you know, what did you walk away thinking about this film? David, why don't you start that off?
Well, I'll do both for you. I'll do a sentence, and then I'll tell you some final thoughts, I guess. Overpromised, underdelivered. That's what I came away with, and I agree. I think it needed to be. This movie needed to be Army of Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It needed to have that sense of like fun and realism, but also like horror and gritty action. It needed to not take itself as seriously as it did. And that's why I think we've got at least 2 to 2.5 different movies in this film. I think Sam Elliott did a terrific job with what he was given. But this was like Crazy Heart meets Army of Darkness in a way. Like, it was just 2 movies kind of smashed together. I wanted to see the scenes where he was picking out the weapons. There was the zoom in where he was going to dig up the box after it got buried with his supposed, you know, remains. And there was the zoom in on the shovel. There was the zoom in on the, you know, like, it was, that was the Army of Darkness stuff. And like the stuff that I loved was the actual like sequence with him going after Hitler. That was very compelling to watch. The hunt for Bigfoot, even though it starts with the even though it starts with him shooting Bigfoot, like what followed was him tracking, him being Rambo, him fighting Bigfoot, getting his ear bit off, like all that is compelling. It needed to find a way to have those 2 sequences married with more action and more development of him in between, but not the development that it gave us. So to tell you the truth, in the end, I appreciated the movie for being original. it was a series of very well-done scenes. They were just, like you said, Toby, randomly put together in a way, and some of the scenes didn't need to be with some of the other scenes. So, and one final thing, I really appreciated the animal work in this movie. The dogs were great.
That's true.
Yeah. That dog was awesome.
Zinger, you want to take a turn?
Sure. I sum up the movie in one sentence. The man who killed Hitler then, like, went through his life doing absolutely nothing but taking pills and sitting around, and then killed the Bigfoot. I mean, technically, the movie gave us its title. It just, there was a lot in between the two.
Yeah.
Or in this case, there was nothing between the two.
Well, a lot of film you have to watch.
Just somebody getting old.
It's, okay, the movie is not what you expect it to be from the title at all, but I'm sure it's an interesting bio, like, not biopic, an interesting character piece on something that we're metaphorically not reading into. I'm excited that Missing Link's out, though, so I'm looking forward to seeing that, because I don't feel that would disappoint me.
Toby, what are your thoughts?
I still think Quentin Tarantino would have really done something special with this.
He couldn't,
script.
Toby. I'm gonna poo-poo your idea real quick.
No,
though.
He
already did Inglourious Basterds. He already killed Hitler once.
I know, but the dialogue would have been. I know a lot of people.
No, it would have just been pointless conversations about medicine.
No, but that's the thing with Quentin Tarantino. He gives you a lot of dialogue. It's just a lot of everyday life. It's supposed to be the calm right before a big storm. That's why in every Quentin Tarantino movie, it goes just haywire right close to the end, and then you have the slowdown to, like, let your heart stop beating so fast, is what I've heard him say in an interview or something like that. He wants that calm after the storm too. So he wants it to be a chaotic, and I think that he could have pulled it off to where there's, you get a little bit of chaos with Hitler dying, and then it's calm, and then it's chaotic again, and then, I don't know, it just seemed like this director is a fan of Tarantino and wanted to do something similar. I really wish this would have been a more of the Old Man Logan kind of story, where he was a badass, and he is an old man. You can show all that, and just he's been on all these crazy adventures. Show some of that, and then, okay, this is the last one. This is the last thing I'm going to do. Don't call me again. Been more of a badass. That's what I would have wished for. I don't think it was terrible. I thought there was a lot of fun things to think about, especially with conspiracy theories and cryptozoology, with the cryptid being sick, which I didn't know there was another movie that was very similar to that idea, but I like that, because I never thought about that. I really was like, huh, what if a cryptid, what if Mothman is sick and it just starts infecting everyone, like, you can't stop it. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know, but I mean, I liked it. I know that's not popular with us four, but I liked it because it was just so out there and different from anything else I've ever seen before.
I will completely agree with you that it was out there and different. That's the one thing it did right. Well, that, and it looked fine. Like, the direction was fine. The performances were okay. Elliot was great. The other ones, Livingston was okay. Larry Miller seemed weird. I love Larry Miller, but he seemed weird in this.
I agree. Do you remember, though, in the first scene that he's, that we find out, like, Samuel Elliott goes in to the barbershop. He's like, did you get your hair cut from somebody else? He's like, yeah. And he's like, come here, I'll trim your hair or whatever. And then, like, the next sequence, he's like, well, you know, Sam Elliott, because I'm your brother, we do this and that. And I'm like, I turn to Annie, I'm like, what is this, an improv scene? Like, what are they doing? Is that the writing? Really?
It's what it all boils down to, is that's the problem with this film, is bad writing. The story is great. This guy should have had a ghostwriter, should have had somebody do a polish, something to clean this thing up. And Toby, you're 100% right. I think Quentin Tarantino would have tore this thing up. Robert Rodriguez would have tore this thing up.
Oh, yeah.
Just anybody that can fill that silence with some good, interesting dialogue, and then punch up those action scenes. Like, let's see the action people are wanting to. I know I'm a broken record, but if you look at movies like From Dusk Till Dawn, which I can't remember if that was Rodriguez or if that was Tarantino that directed it. It was Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Tucker, was it Tucker and Dale versus Evil? Was another horror film that was, or I guess action horror. It was had the comedic element. They did that really well. Or Black Dynamite, Bubba Hotep. There's all kinds of these these films where they don't take themselves seriously, like you said. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, David, they don't take themselves seriously, and that's what allows them to be fun. And this one was the opposite of that. It wasn't fun. And so I guess my line would be, what a shame. Because this the story was so good, had Sam Elliott in it, Bigfoot killing Nazis, like all my favorite stuff. And I have no desire to even think about this film again, let alone watch it.
I think that's perfect. What a shame. Because I feel like it was, it almost was at that peak of being like, yeah, this was badass. But it just missed on a bunch of steps. So what a shame is the perfect way to sum it up.
I watched a few reviews of this after I watched it the second time. And one, I can't remember who said this, but one of the guys said they watched the trailer and they thought, oh, okay, this is going to be so good because the trailer's terrible. They didn't show anything. So they're holding all the good stuff back for us to watch in the film. And little did he know,
those fools,
none of that was ever in the film to begin with. So what you saw in the trailer is exactly the action you see. In fact, if you guys want to watch the film, watch the extended trailer, save yourself an hour.
At $5 to $10.
That's my final comment.
Can I change mine real quick for my box blurb to just be the fever dream of Alex Jones, but the film?
Oh, man.
There was no gay frogs.
But there was goblin vomit.
That's what was in the box, guys. We figured
it was
it out.
Gay frog.
The gay frogs in the box. Oh, jeez.
Wow. Well, so that'll do it then for us for The Man Who Killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. What do you guys think? Worth a watch? If people listen to this and they're contemplating watching it, yes
rent
or
it.
No? Worth watching? Toby no. says
one,
yes.
One rent. Derek just rent no. it. Don't buy it. It's too much to buy it. Rent it. $3.
Watch the trailer and then go watch The Big Lebowski.
Actually, that is accurate. I second that. Just go do that.
I would say don't spend money on it. I would say wait till it's streaming for free somewhere.
Yeah. And then fast forward through all the romantic stuff that's unnecessary, the old man stuff that's unnecessary.
Yeah, like literally watch The Man Who Killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. That's all you need to watch in this film.
You know what? If you just fast forward to just those two scenes, I don't think you would miss out on anything. Like, you wouldn't be like, what's going on? Why is he killing Bigfoot? Yeah. Why is he kill? Doesn't need to be explained. Because it never explains why he kills Hitler. Like, why he is the guy. But whatever.
Like I said, there's a very good film of him dealing with all that stuff in there. It just doesn't need to be the same film as The Man Who Killed Hitler and then the Bigfoot. That's all there is. So, anyways,
I just thought of this. He should have been portrayed as like the most interesting man in the world, like the Dos Equis guy. Like that's how he should have been portrayed. And part of the problem here with this story, and I'm just now realizing this, is he's too humble. The guy killed Hitler. Like, go tell everybody at the bar you killed Hitler. Like, we don't want a humble hero in this situation. We want the guy that killed Hitler to be like Captain America. You know what I mean? Like, he's the one that stops bar fights, or he's the one that saw an old lady get pushed and squealed to a stop and beat up the perpetrator. Like, he doesn't do any of that stuff. He's sad that he killed Hitler. Like, that's a quick way to ruin a hero, to make him cry because he killed Hitler. And that's exactly what this film did. And that's one of my biggest problems looking back on it, is that you have arguably the most evil man to ever exist on the planet. And here is our main character, who's supposed to be this world-class, awesome, badass, dangerous guy, and he's crying because he killed Adolf Hitler. That pretty much sums up the film for me. maybe I'm calloused, I don't know, but to me, if I killed Hitler, you guys would all know about it. I would have a post. I would have a poster with the gun I used, and I would autograph it, send every one of you a copy. Like,
we know Derek. You killed Hitler. Just let's talk
let
about
it go.
Something else.
Let it go.
I can't make it to your monthly bash. You just throw a party for yourself.
I just want to. I just want you to have a shirt now that says "Who killed Hitler? this guy.
This guy. It's two thumbs.
Yeah, just
and a bent pinky.
Well, cool. Well, we've got a few movies on our short list for other things to discuss, and it's fun doing these topics, and yeah. We've gotten some pretty good feedback about them. So I think I'd like to keep doing them in the near future, at least. So let's see, Derek, why don't you start us off and make sure to point everybody where to find your stuff that's non-roundtable and non-bashing on bad movies.
If you're still interested in my opinions and what I have to say after this hour-long segment, you can find Monsters Among Us basically anywhere you can find podcasts. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter. I do a terrible job of updating either of those, but our Facebook group is huge. So go on Facebook, search Monsters Among Us Podcast, and check us out.
You can check out the Secret Transmission podcast. We do conspiracies and all that good stuff in a satire way. We're on all the major podcasting platforms, Instagram and Twitter at Secret Transpod. And I also have a retro video game podcast called Secret Levels. Go check that out. It's all on all the same major podcasting platforms. So yeah, if you like old video games, yeah. Zanger's been on it a couple of times, unfortunately.
I need to find another sequel to do. You guys did Tony Hawk 2 without me. I'm sad.
Yeah, Zanger only comes on for games that have a 2 in them, so he's got to be. He's got to pick sequels.
Of course, you can find me on my podcast, Zingness, where we talk comic books, video games, movies, anything pop culture and fun. And you can also find me talking Star Wars on Knights of Vader. Of course, you can find both of those on Twitter and Facebook.
And I was just on a Zing This where we were talking about the movie Thor, which was a very fun conversation.
Yes, and in my watching of the Cinematic Universe of Marvel, I had to take a break to watch this movie. So my next movie I got is Captain America Civil War. Almost there, guys.
Jeez Louise. Zinger's going through all the movies leading up to
all of them.
Endgame. Which is a monumental task, a superhero feat in itself. And we talked about Thor, which was fun. So, good time. Please check out everybody's podcast, and don't forget to head over to blurryphotos.org to check out my back catalog of 200 and almost 30 some odd shows now.
I'm catching up on you.
Yeah. There's Blurry Photos podcast at Facebook, Instagram, and blurry_photos on Twitter. You guys can find all that stuff. Just search everything, anything, anywhere, anytime. For Derek, Toby, and Justin Zinger, I have been David Flora. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for talking to me, everybody, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night. And I hope you guys enjoyed that roundtable as much as we enjoyed doing it. Sometimes it's fun just to get together with like-minded people and to discuss things off the cuff and throw out different ideas and sometimes even poke a little fun. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Now, as I promised, that final call of the evening. Now, I chose this call because, in my opinion, it ties in a bit to the subject matter of the film. Not that the caller killed Hitler or that the caller shot the Bigfoot, but as extraordinary as Sam Elliott's character's claims were, I can't help but feel that this caller's claims are equally as extraordinary. The chances of one human being murdering one of the most hated people to ever exist, and then a few short decades later killing one of the most well-known mythical creatures on the planet, the odds are astronomical. Now our final caller of the evening, Anne, has also submitted something that is a bit extraordinary. Not one, not two, but three Bigfoot experiences. The following is Anne's call from the state of Texas.
Hi, this is Anne. I had called in before with a protective angel spirit, whatever it is, story throughout my life. I wanted to share with you possible Bigfoot couple of things that happened as well. This was back in the late 80s. I was a teenager in a small town in East Texas. My boyfriend at the time, he still enjoyed going out with his cousin, and they liked to fish, do a little hunting, and they would fish back in these fishing holes way off in the woods. Anyway, they were doing that one day, had been back there fishing for quite a while, and it was starting to get dark, so they were making their way back to the truck. They parked in a clearing quite a ways from the fishing hole. Now, I'm telling this secondhand because I wasn't there, but this is what my boyfriend at the time told me. He and his cousin became aware that something was walking either parallel with them or behind them in the woods and would stop when they stopped. They said it sounded as if it were something large, bipedal. It was just starting to get dark, but they could still see pretty well. They didn't see anything. It wasn't that far away, which they found strange that they couldn't see it, but this is East Texas. It was pretty thick woods. They didn't think too much about it, thought maybe it was a deer or something, just kept walking toward the car or the truck, and it just kept trailing behind them. Now, at this point, as they were walking, of course, it was getting darker and darker, and the woods being dark anyway. They did have a flashlight with them, and they started shining it back where they heard this walking. It was unnerving to them because it would stop when they stopped. And it was just out of range of where they could see it. So they got to the clearing. The truck was still a little ways off, but they were getting spooked at this point, so they wanted to walk, get to that clearing, and then just walk parallel to the woods until they got to the truck. So that's what they did, and they kept shining the light back off in the woods because as they walked through the clearing, whatever this was parallel to them walking in the woods, and they would shine the light back in there, and they couldn't understand why they couldn't see eye shine because, you know, typically if it was a deer or something like that, you might see some eye shine with the light because they said it did not sound like it was very far away at all. Now they're really spooked because he said, my boyfriend told me at the time, he said it was, he had the feeling that whatever it was looking away when they would shine the light so they couldn't see eye shine. Like it was looking away to stay hidden, which really spooked them. So they wound up really hightailing it toward the truck and got out of there. Nothing else happened. My second story is my same boyfriend and I, both hotheads at the time, hotheaded teenagers, and we would argue a lot. There was a road we were going down that we went down frequently to get between town and my home where I lived as we were going out for the evening. And we were having a pretty bad argument this one night, and he just pulled the truck over on that road. It's a blacktop road, no lights along the road, very few houses. If there were houses, they were spaced way apart, you know, a mile or more and way back off the road. There really wasn't anything much down that road at all. It was pretty spooky road. So he pulls the truck over, shut it off. We're arguing. It was a warm night, I remember. We rolled the windows down to get a little fresh air. And we were arguing and arguing and talking and trying to, you know, talk things out a little bit. I would say about 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes had passed of us sitting there. No cars had gone by. Like I said, it wasn't a very well-traveled road. We were working things out, talking things out. And I happened to glance behind the truck. And that's when I saw something that I can't really explain. I looked behind the truck, and standing off, I would say no more than 20 feet from the back bumper was a tall figure. Now, I'm trying to make sense of this in my mind and my memory because, of course, at the time, I did not think, oh, look, there's a Bigfoot. I thought, oh, my God, there's a person standing there very quietly watching us. The road was so dark, there wasn't a moon that night that I recall because it was just that dark outside, and a blacktop road and all of that. So what I saw was this very tall, you know, humanish looking figure. I didn't look at it very long. And then I saw a red glow. Now, at the time, I thought, you know, my mind trying to make logical sense of it, I thought perhaps it was someone standing back there smoking a cigarette, and they drew in a breath on that cigarette, and it, you know, and it made the ash glow at the end or something. But that was what came to my mind because it seemed like the logical thing. As I said, we had the windows down. We did not smell cigarette smoke. I would have noticed that. I've always been sensitive to that particular smell. I couldn't tell you which way the wind was blowing or any of that. So I guess it could have been, he could have been, you know, downwind. But so I see, as soon as I saw this glow and I realized someone was standing there very quietly watching us, it freaked me out because, as I said, there's really nothing down that road. We weren't parked near a home at all. There would be no reason for somebody to just be strolling down that road at midnight, or it was quite late at night. I remember that. It was at the end of our date, so it was late. So I turned around, and I was afraid because, you know, of course, our windows were down. This person, or whatever it was not very far away, and our doors weren't locked. And I said to my boyfriend very quietly, there's someone back there watching us. And he just, like, did a quick peek. He didn't turn and stare either. He did a quick peek. I had turned facing forward. I was so afraid. I was too scared to look. I know that sounds silly, that I should have been keeping my eye on whoever or whatever that was, but that's how afraid I was. My boyfriend said, on the count of three, you know, roll up your window as fast as you can, lock your door. And so we did. We like suddenly jumped into action, rolled up our windows, and of course that they were the old fashioned. This was the 72 Chevy pickup truck, so literally had to roll the windows up. Did that as quickly as we could, lock the door. He started the car. Now this whole time I'm looking forward. I'm too afraid to turn around and look behind me. He starts the engine, and just like in a bad B movie, the engine took a minute to catch. He was having like some problems with the starter or whatever it was. And I thought, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. His truck's not going to start. But thank God it did. And he goes to jam it into gear, whatever was, or whoever was back there, jumped into the bed of the truck. We both felt the bed of the truck dip down, and we knew whoever it was had jumped back there. He took off as fast as he could, peeling rubber, going down the road. I assumed we either tipped it off, you know, tipped whoever or whatever it was out of the truck by our acceleration, or jumped back out, and we took off flying down that road. I was completely freaked out by that. And again, at the time, I just thought, well, it must have been just some weird guy that came up on us and was just standing there, maybe listening to us or whatever, smoking. But, you know, now at the time, looking back, I'm not so sure. I've listened to a lot of Bigfoot stories, and I've heard a lot of stories about red glowing eyes and things like that. So, and again, who on earth would be walking down this dark, dark road at midnight? You know, what are the odds that somebody would be doing that, just come upon us and stand there? I mean, this is Texas. People are armed. I have a third story as well for you. That was a really creepy one. So my third story happened right around that same time, same boyfriend. We were out, you know, having a date, and at the end of going to the movies or whatever we did, we decided to go parking like teenagers do. So we went to an area where I had no idea where I was. I believe it was near the fishing hole that he and his cousin went to. I could be wrong about that, from my first story, where they were followed out of the woods. But anyway, I had never been to this particular place. Way back off in the woods, there was a little dirt road that went back in there. And there was water back in there, a little pond back in there. So we parked, but right immediately as we came to stop and he parked the car, I felt this feeling of terrible dread, as if I was either picking up on something that had happened there in the past or feeling like something terrible was going to happen. I told him about it. He kind of poo-pooed it, and I could not shake the feeling. Now, at the time, I had no idea, you know, why I felt that way. We did wind up leaving. It became so strong that I literally couldn't bear it. I was almost going to become hysterical if we didn't leave. I just felt this terrible, terrible dread, almost to where I was sick to my stomach with it. So we did wind up leaving. Now, I wouldn't have thought too much about that. I recall it very vividly, but, you know, whatever. I put it off as something else. Maybe it's because it was an unknown area, or it was just very dark and kind of spooky and a pond back in there and that sort of thing. But having listened to a lot of these Bigfoot sightings and things like that, and how the people report a feeling of dread with this creature in the area, now I'm not so sure that's not what was going on. But what was strange was my boyfriend did not have those feelings that I recall, certainly not to the extent that I was having them. So I don't know. I don't know what that was. It was a creepy area, but that strong feeling of dread and something terrible going to happen was really, really strong. So maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure. So those are my stories. Fortunately, I've not bumped into a Bigfoot in the woods myself. I hope I never do. Other people's stories terrify me, so I hope I never do. So I hope you and your listeners enjoy those stories, and I love your podcast. I hope that helps you out some. Talk to you later. Oh, and I'll be calling back. I have a lot of paranormal ghost stories, some really crazy ones, so I'll call back with those another time. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Anne. And I should clear up that I did not mean to imply that your story was unbelievable, just that it was extraordinary. Now, these stories remind me of two separate cases, and ironically enough, both of those cases took place in the state of Texas. The first thing it reminded me of was something a little more benign, the Lake Worth Monster. Now, I know this is something that I've touched on in past episodes, but essentially in 1969, a white Bigfoot-type creature was seen on and around an island near Lake Worth. Now, apparently this creature was somewhat aggressive. It threw tires at necking teenagers and chased a few people out of the area. Now, the flap lasted for a few weeks and eventually died down, with no proof and no evidence. Now, the other case that this reminds me of is something much, much darker. Now, any of you that have seen the film The Town That Dreaded Sundown may know of this story. In the small town of Texarkana, Texas, in 1946, a killer known as the Phantom Killer was murdering parked teenagers throughout the town. For more on that infamous string of murders, I kick it over to Scary Mysteries on YouTube.
The Town That Dreaded Sundown was a 1976 film directed and co-starred by Charles B. Pierce. The film is set in the small town of Texarkana, Texas, where a phantom killer had been laying siege to the residents. The first victims were a couple parked in a lover's lane. Although the girl wasn't raped, parts of her body, including her breast and back, had been severely bitten. Several more attacks happened, each one of them couples in either secluded spots or inside their homes. In the end, the police never captured the phantom, and his identity remains unknown. This idea of a fictional phantom killer has remained a fixture in many horror movies, but in the case of this film, there was a real-life phantom killer that inspired the story and hunted the streets of Texarkana in the 1940s. Like clockwork, the Phantom Killer, or Phantom Slayer, would attack his victims 21 days apart. The first attack, he left his victims barely alive, while the rest were killed with only a single survivor who had been heavily wounded. The Phantom's MO included attacking only on weekends and usually targeting couples in secluded spots or homes during the night. Even though there were surviving victims, they couldn't give an accurate description of the killer because he always wore a sack over his face with eye holes cut out. Plenty of suspects were questioned, including a man named Yul Sweeney, who was busted for stealing cars. However, only circumstantial evidence pointed to him as the Phantom. To date, the Phantom Killer of Texarkana killed 5 people in 10 weeks and severely wounded 5 others. Just like in the movie, he remains unidentified. Every year, the town of Texarkana hosts a movie night at Spring Lake Park, right near where the second double murder was committed. The town that dreaded sundown is always the last movie they show.
Of course, you can find a link to that video in the show notes for tonight's episode. Now, I don't know what it is about Texas, but it seems like there's a lot of strange and creepy things that seem to take place in that state. Now, Anne, I don't know exactly which part of the state these encounters took place in, but I can tell you that the eastern half of the state of Texas is quite active with Bigfoot sightings. Now, a lot of people in that area, of course, refer to them as skunk apes or boogers, or, you know, there's a variety of different names that are given to these creatures throughout the region. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Now, before I cut out of here, I'd like to touch on a few of these quick subjects. Remember to rate and review the page on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can buy merchandise at monstersamonguspodcast.com/shop, and you can also donate using /donate. And don't forget about Patreon. Just a couple days ago, I sat down with Mickey, who called in on Season 5, Episode 9, about her experience with a Sasquatch-type creature while she was resting in her big rig in the state of Idaho. So if that's something that interests you, head on over to patreon.com and search for Monsters Among Us Podcast. A $4 monthly donation gets you access to not only that episode, but all the past Patreon episodes. And I don't have to tell you how important that sort of support is in keeping the show going. And on that note, that's going to do it for this episode. So thank you again, Anne, for taking the time to share those stories. I think it's pretty incredible that somebody has one Sasquatch story, let alone 3. So thank you again for taking the time to share that call. And thank you for tuning in to this episode. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Additional support is provided by Addie Lloyd, Warren Ponabbitt, and Tony Bell. All audio used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. And music for this episode was provided by Coag Music. Thank you all for listening, and until next week.
It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To get behind the wheel. To go out on the open road. To feel a rush of adrenaline. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes an exhilarating experience. The invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open. But the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.